Hello and welcome to Everything in Between, the podcast where a dad and daughter duo delve deep into topics ranging from true crime to paranormal occurrences to urban legends and, well, everything in between. I'm Emma.
I'm the dad.
That's Anish. And break is finally coming to a close, which is sad.
Thank God.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
It's watching The Sloth.
I liked it. I thought it was nice. I got to bake a lot, meaning I baked 2 things. And yes, they were from a box, but you know, I prefer to bake not from a box, but I don't know. You just brought the boxes home and I baked.
Because again, sloth. Yeah, exactly. Had I not, then you'd just been, oh, I'm just going to stay here on the couch because, you know, it's so stressful. Blah, 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 blah.
Listen, it's my second semester senior year. I deserve to be sloth right now.
No, what?
Yeah, no, this is like senioritis season.
I'm okay with all that. Totally okay with that. But we have so much stuff that has, like, we had to bring in firewood. We had to actually even, like, clean up the rest of the fireplace itself. Like, all those things that could be done. You know, even splitting some of the wood.
I'm, like, falling asleep for this list right now. Okay.
Well, anyway, clearly, you just won't. I mean, it won't matter because your brother will get the house made because he'll know what to do and actually.
I know how to do
you
it.
Don't
you
don't.
Yes, I do. Okay.
All right. We'll
I know how to do it.
Okay.
And you know what? We have Google. Mm-hmm. So, even if I
didn't that won't help. That's not. Because I. Oh my God, it won't help. You know, there's specific things to that fireplace because of the layout that you have to do for it to work. Splitting wood and that kind of stuff, yeah, fine. But I mean, come on, you know, if you have to Google that, then you have bigger problems. Okay. So, yes, sloth.
Okay, moving on. We got to catch up on a lot of shows and movies. I say that, actually, I don't think we really caught up on many. We started and finished a lot. We finished Gravity Falls, which I thought was a lot longer than it actually was. And I was kind of sad that it ended. But, I mean, like you were saying,
I still can't believe that was on Disney. I don't even know how that happened because it is. It's just.
I guess a lot just goes over kids' heads.
It's not the kids' heads I'm worried about. I'm worried about the folks at Disney who are like, oh my God, we're all pure this crap, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, hey, credit to them.
You gotta find things to keep the parents interested.
Again, I'm not saying that. It's just shocking to me that made it through the Disney whatever. Well, I guess there is no quality control, but whatever.
Well, it was very good. And I wish there was more, but. Oh, well. We also watched a couple movies. We watched your 80s movie, Gross Point Blank, which you, what?
It's not an 80s movie.
I mean, it's got the vibe. It's got the vibe. It does.
It's a reunion from that class graduated in 86, but the movie came out.
Yes, I know, but it's got 97. The 80s vibe.
Okay.
It does. There's just something about it. It does. I'm sorry to say, but it was good. And I thought it was very funny. And I have to go show that to all my friends now. And wait, did we own it or what? Where was it on that we watched it? Was it Amazon?
It might have been Amazon. Yeah, I think so. I don't think it was Netflix.
Okay. Yeah, because I think that's when we saw that Hunters was coming out.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is the next thing we're going to talk about. Actually, we should probably talk about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang first because that's what we watched after. So we watched Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and I've been, like, begging because I watched it, like as a child a few times. But then, you know, like, a decade passed, and now I was Chitty Chitty Bang Bangless, and we finally watched it. And
There's no way it was a decade.
It was probably that long.
No.
Oh,
there is no way.
Since I was 7? Yeah, I would see that. I could see that.
Oh, that's right. You're 17. Okay.
Yeah, I am 17. That's right.
I was like, oh, she was 4 the last time she saw it? Like, All
right. Avoid the dementia sitting in. Anyway, but we finished at like 12:30 in the morning, which was fun. Everybody else was like, I'm done, and they went to bed.
I think they were done when we put it on. I don't think they were done from a war of attrition to watch it. I think they're kind of like, you know, I'm out.
Well,
which is, again, a mistake because it is a great film.
It really is. It was nice. I really felt like I was 7 again watching it. It was nice. And I think we did watch it to celebrate, kind of, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
yep.
I think I found out, like, right, it was maybe right after we finished.
It was after Gross Point. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you guys, like, pretty much at every 15 minutes are like, did you check your emails? Because it's sort of college admission season. And so I've been, like, checking my emails at sort of regular intervals.
I'm going to say the word of the episode is sloth. Okay? I'm just going to say that. This is not even getting up. This is lifting your hand up with your device, your phone, and then just going to email. But anyway, please continue on your
this episode.
Yeah, just keep going.
Anyway, I got my first college acceptance is what I was going to say, which is really exciting. And I found out early and everything.
No, it's great. Yeah, it was awesome because you did. They weren't supposed to announce for a while.
Yeah, until like late March.
Yeah, so you found out early.
I'm so happy.
You got in there into the Honors College. That's even better. So all of that is awesome. So yeah, we're psyched. And now I guess they'll be coming fast and furious in the
starting next month
or whatever, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So hey, well, again, it puts your mind at ease because now.
I know that I'm going somewhere.
Puts our mind
somewhere.
At ease because that means you're not be staying with us. So,
hey, well, I could be.
No.
So you never know. I can always choose to go somewhere online.
Yeah. Okay. Online, outside.
I'll go to Purdue University. That's one of the online ones, right?
No. Purdue's a real university.
But they said they had online classes.
Well, I think
those commercials lied to me.
I'm pretty sure most universities and colleges have some kind of online presence, but yeah.
Okay.
It's not just an online school like Phoenix or whatever.
Lied to me, so that's
fine. Okay.
Anyway, and then our last sort of like film related thing is we started and finished the new Amazon Prime show Hunters, which you told me about. That is insane. And I think we agreed, like, it's 10 episodes, and the first 9 episodes were amazing, and then the last one was kind of stretching it a little bit.
It is, it is emotional in every way. I mean, again, it's about the Holocaust. So in that sense, it's, you're going to have, well, unless you yourself are dead inside.
Every emotion.
Yeah. But,
every single one.
It is a, you know, loosely based on, one of the Nazi hunter, well, the famous Nazi hunter who actually makes an appearance in the show. But they make it very comic book-esque in the sense that there are these little snippets, vignettes in between, just that, like public service announcements. And then the main, well, I shouldn't say he's the main character, but one of the protagonists works at a comic book store. So everything kind of relates to good and evil, things like that.
Bring up like Batman and stuff.
But it's really well done. It's again, it's on the edge of your seat. You will be worried about like what's going to happen. There's this foreshadowing component to it that it's not Game of Thrones where everybody dies that you love kind of thing, but you just don't know what's going to happen to who, when, and where. But I did read something that I think we should definitely say about it because what they were saying, and this is, I think, the Auschwitz Memorial Museum.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's them, or maybe it's another body that is saying that they're just worried because it's not some of the things that they show that happen in the camps are so crazy, and people are worried that folks will use it for propaganda against it, saying that see, that's not true. Conspiracy theories will start, and they'll start to like kind of chip away at like all the crazy people who already chip away that are Holocaust deniers. But, and I get that. I think I can see where I was reading something today about it and it was a bigger piece because they're saying that Amazon themselves actually still have books that are, well, anti-Semitic children's books from the author who was, I think he was the founder or the editor of like the Der Stürmer back, you know, I mean, he's a known Nazi. So there's these things there. So they're just, and maybe this also helps because it gets them out there to say like, this needs to be removed. But they were concerned because the flashbacks and things and like some of the things that happen and the stories they tell are just all over the place. But I could see where they're coming from saying, well, you're just feeding conspiracy theorists to say that this didn't actually happen because you're making up stuff. Right. And you're, you know, but the characters as a cast, the ensemble. So if you just take it and you try to watch it as an, you know, as entertainment, mm-hmm. It will keep you on the edge of your seat. To your point, I think it, by the last episode, you know, it's this roller coaster ride. And the last episode is just weird. It's just,
They just like throw a lot at you.
Well, I don't even think I throw a lot. I don't think we're spoiling it, and we're not trying to say it. It definitely just left you afterwards, like, huh? You know, I mean, because it's building. There, you know, like I said, it is a roller coaster ride, and it's that last part where, you know, you've done a couple of those drops, and then you've mm-hmm. been building up to this last massive drop, and it just. I was saying to you, it felt like a Doctor Who episode at some point where you're like, are they just going to say, oh, we're not going to tell you how everything happened, but it's solved, that kind of thing. And it was slightly anticlimactic to me. But again, I did read that the guy who wrote it and it's his idea and everything has it. His idea was 5 seasons. Mm. He has it written already. Whoa. Or like the whole thing, to like the arc is there. He knows how it's going to end. So if that's the case, I mean, if it gets picked up, there's no guarantee it's going to.
I hope it does.
Well, I mean, again, but if that's the case, then you have to kind of see it in its entirety. So the way that last episode happened, maybe you're just like, okay, well then, because there's more coming and he's thought it out.
That's right.
But I mean, we pretty much watched it.
In like a couple days, like three.
Well, I think in 24
days.
Hours overall, roughly,
really?
Right? Because like, when did we start? We watched it on Friday night and finished on Saturday.
Oh my God, it's Sunday?
Yeah, because I think we started it.
Time is not real.
Maybe it wasn't fully 24, but close to it. Within 24
it hours, it felt like we watched a lot longer. That's so weird.
Because, but it's one of those things again where you don't like when an episode ends. You definitely want to keep going. So,
yeah.
So
it was so strange, especially because. Okay, Logan Lerman is in it, right?
Yeah.
And I have this whole thing. As some of you may know, I'm so obsessed with, like, Percy Jackson, like, the books, obviously. Like, ridiculously obsessed. And it was my whole entire childhood. And I kind of had this, like, grudge in my heart, like, against, like, Logan Lerman and the whole cast of the movies. And I don't know. I felt so weird to, like, watch him again.
I still don't understand how you blame the actors.
I know. It's just
somebody adapted a screenplay.
I know. Little child me had all this anger and just blamed it on the people she could see, you know?
Okay, fair enough.
Again, this is like a decade ago.
Fair enough.
But anyway, I think my little anger, rage monster inside of me is finally letting that go.
And it's funny. Even his character, I don't know. He angers me as a lot as well, so I don't understand. But again,
he does mess stuff up.
We're in that first, you know, in this guy's brain, where this character goes. So I'm still not sold on him. And but yeah, the rest of the character's great. So
yeah.
So if you get a chance, and if you just again you want to view it as entertainment,
definitely watch it.
It's worth a watch.
There's some really funny parts.
The PSAs the PSAs are great.
They really are. And then lastly, you've got Liverpool news.
It was a bittersweet week because we had our, actually, I guess we did record before the last Premier League game, right? So it was Champions League, and we played Tuesday away. We lost 1-0 to Atletico Madrid. And I don't know, like, it's one of those things where Atletico deserved a point at a minimum, but they scored on a just freak goal in the first 5 minutes of the game off a corner that should never have been a corner to begin with, just because the ref was awful. And then it ricocheted off of one of our players right to another player and they poked it away. And then for the next, you know, 85 minutes of the game, Atletico play defensive, and that's what they were going to do. Like, I mean, we all knew that's what they were. That's how they play to begin with. But once you get that lead, it makes it even more of a wall, and it was tough. We didn't even get a shot on goal, which, again, credit to Atletico. But it was a dirty game. Like, I mean, they were trying to get Mane sent off, falling, this, that, whatever. But I will say one thing. You can tell how much it angered Liverpool, and I think this is a good thing. I think, because the way they all finish is like, look, this was just the first half, because you have to play two games. It's two legs. In a way, as much as I was kind of disappointed, and at the end, I was like, okay, look, it's not as if we deserved a win, by no means. I mean, we were definitely the team that was playing for the full 90 minutes. But Atletico, I got to give them credit. That defense, the way they played, to not let us get a shot off, is or at least on target, is amazing. But yeah, I'm liking the anger, and I'm liking the interviews afterwards. And even Klopp, like, you know, people are like, oh, they're crybabies. I'm like, you know what? Let's see who's crying. We're in Anfield in a few weeks, and then we'll see. But we play tomorrow, regular Premier League, and our 25-point lead is now down to 19 because of there was that one team had a game in hand, and then now we have a game in hand. But if we win tomorrow, get it back to 22, hey, that means just four more wins next. So right now it's 5 wins to sew up the title. But we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I've got an in-between for you this week.
Okay. I got true crime.
Awesome. So should we jump in?
Let's do it.
All right. So this one I'm very excited about. I'll list some of my sources, or all of my sources. I use Wikipedia, the Courier Press, the Mothman Wiki actually had a page on this.
Oh, I wonder what this is about.
It's not Mothman.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Which was very interesting. I used WKMS, which is like an NPR sort of subsection. I used, lastly, Country Living, which was probably like the most helpful. They had like a whole like timeline of the events.
Oh, cool.
So this is another one where if you know it, you're going to know it in the first line. So I'm sure this is a really famous one.
Okay.
So it was August 21st, 1955 in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Nothing yet?
No.
Okay. Maybe it wasn't the first line. The night was dark. But from above, a small beacon of light could be seen. A farmhouse, lonely in its surroundings, the only building for miles around, sort of stood in the middle of the forest.
Still nothing.
The lights were on as the Sutton family prepared for a quiet evening.
I know this name.
The Sutton family?
Yeah.
Okay. So there was sort of like a family gathering type deal that night. In the house itself, lived Mother Glennie Lankford and her 3 children. Glennie's older son, Elmer Lucky Sutton, who's about 20, was visiting that night with his wife Vera. Also with them were the couple's friends, Billy Ray and June Taylor, who were staying over there for the weekend. Lucky had grown up in the farmhouse with his brother, JC. And at some point, their father sort of like was out of the picture, or maybe it was a divorce or he died. I don't know exactly. But Glennie then had 3 other children, with somebody else that were half the siblings of Lucky. Okay. And JC. And so then JC, his wife was there as well. He and his wife, and another family friend called O.P. Baker. So in all, there's 11 people.
Okay.
Lucky, by the way, worked with a traveling carnival. I don't really know what his job was, but it sort of comes in a little bit.
Okay.
So the group of 11 enjoyed a, quote, hearty supper prepared by Glennie before settling in for a card game. While they were all, like, getting themselves sorted, Billy Ray excused himself to refill his water glass at the well. To do this, he'd have to leave the house and travel outdoors a little bit, which wasn't far, but it did require him to, like, leave the others and go outside.
Okay.
moments after he left, Billy rushed back in the house. It's unclear whether he ever made it to the well, but his water glass lay forgotten as he told the others of what he'd seen.
Okay.
According to Billy, as he stepped outside, he'd spotted a round metallic object moving swiftly through the sky above the farm. Rainbow-colored streaks seemed to trail behind it as it glided across his view, leaving him speechless. Still nothing? Really?
No.
Maybe you don't know it.
If it's aliens and UFOs, I probably don't.
Oh. Interesting. Very interesting. Some classify these creatures as cryptids.
But okay.
They're kind of aliens. Anyway, so the others laughed at his story. After all, Billy and Lucky were known for trying to prank each other, so it probably was nothing. But Billy definitely seemed bothered about what he'd seen, so the others just started offering up explanations, like, for example, it must have been a meteor or a shooting star and nothing to be worried about.
Or that he was really getting moonshine. And
that's that actually comes in.
Oh, fair enough.
The moonshine does come up later.
Shocking.
So Billy even asked his wife, June, in seriousness if she believed him. But the, quote, absurdity of it all sent her and others into fits of laughter.
Okay.
So they're all just laughing at him now. Unable to keep his mind off of what he'd seen, Billy asked Lucky to come outside with him so he could point out where the object had been in the sky.
Okay.
So Lucky agreed hesitantly, not really sure what to make of his friend's story. However, it was clear he was upset about something, so he did eventually cave and go outside. So the two men went outside and, seeing nothing, started to return to the house. But as they turned back to face the door, something caught their eye. There, in the woods behind their house, was a glowing object. Only it was moving. The object was approaching the house, getting closer and closer by the second. It was short, they realized, as the details about it began to sharpen. Not only was it short, but it was humanoid. It had, quote, large eyes, two legs that seemed to float rather than walk, and two arms raised as if in surrender.
Okay.
Unable to comprehend what he was seeing, Lucky swore loudly, and the two men ran back inside, slamming the doors behind them.
All right.
As you do. So the men told the others what they'd seen, describing the creature as an otherworldly goblin.
And it's outside right now.
Yes, it's outside.
Okay.
What?
No, keep dying. I understand you're explaining something that it's outside. Are there no windows in this house?
Yes, there are windows.
Okay, all right. Just wondering.
Other people can look out the windows. They will eventually.
Okay, just want to make sure. All right, fair enough.
Anyway, this serious tone and haunting speech terrified the three young children. So Glennie sent them to bed.
Okay, fair. Well, again, children.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just go away. We're dealing with
right,
let exactly. The grown-ups talk.
Right. Nothing to see here.
Yeah. So she wasn't exactly sure what the commotion was about either. Quote, she'd lived on the property for decades and never experienced anything even remotely strange.
In Kentucky.
In Kentucky.
Nothing strange.
Nope.
Okay.
So, however...
I mean, even in New Jersey, strange things happen.
Yes, that is okay. True. So the experience was enough for the men to take position at the doors of the house, guarding the occupants from the unknown creature outside. So Lucky stood at the front with a 12-gauge shotgun, and Billy dutifully guarded the back with a 22 caliber something. I don't know my guns. Anyway, so Glennie later reported that she still thought this was all an elaborate trick and that the two of them were in on it, and so she thought, quote, I'm not going to be scared of my own house.
Good for her?
Yeah. So she knew that there was no use in asking her son, Lucky, like, what was going on and what the whole prank was and what this little game was that they were playing. So she approached Billy at the back of the house, asking him exactly, like, what this game was about. Billy replied sternly, quote, Miss Glennie, I hope you don't have to find out.
Okay.
As if on cue, a figure about 3 feet tall appeared in the doorway, seemingly out of nowhere. Glennie screamed, and everyone ran to see what the commotion was.
No one fired a shot.
Hold on! I'm just Jesus! Right. The next bullet, Billy shot the creature.
Okay, I'm just thinking.
Piercing a hole through the screen door.
I would say, scream, shot fired.
Anyway, he shot the creature.
Okay.
It seemed to fall, or at least like leave their sight, so he stepped out on the porch to see where it had gone. As he did, a clawed hand reached down from above him from the roof and grazed his hair.
Okay.
Aline, who is the daughter-in-law, JC's wife, witnessed this and yanked Billy back inside.
Okay.
So, one of them has been shot, and there's another one on top of the roof.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought that was just a single one. All right, fair enough. Well,
anyway, so Lucky then stepped outside, aiming at the roof where he spotted the creature. He shot it, and it rolled off the roof before disappearing into the woods, seemingly unhurt.
Okay.
So, and he's positive.
And the other one's nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, the other one is like sort of rolled out of sight.
Okay.
So they're both gone. Okay. And seemingly not injured at all.
Mm-hmm.
So meanwhile, in the living room, JC watched as another creature appeared outside the window. They're using windows here.
Okay.
Quote, a pair of glowing eyes and a set of talons threatened to break through the glass and enter the home. JC picked up a 20-gauge shotgun and shot it through the glass, grabbing Billy's attention. So now Billy comes in, and he shoots the creature with his gun, which caused it to do a backflip and start running away.
Okay.
So Glennie then started to wonder if the creatures were sent by the devil. She started praying. When the children stirred in their beds from the commotion...
Not the gunshots.
No, the commotion meaning the gunshots, okay. Yes. she encouraged them to pray as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Lucky started urging the women to go and hide, as you do. It's 1955. But Glennie was hesitant.
Fair enough. Good for Glennie.
Yeah. Quote, she could hardly believe what she'd seen earlier. She needed a second look to be sure.
Good for Glennie.
Yeah, she's going to defend her house here.
Mm-hmm.
So Lucky and Billy went out into the front yard while JC and OP, who I guess is a man.
Do they have phones?
It's 1955.
They do have phones.
I don't know the evolution of phones. They don't have phones in this scenario. They're in a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere in this really small town in Kentucky.
Okay.
They don't have any phones. Okay?
Fair enough.
Don't have any phones.
Convenient.
Anyway, so Glennie is waiting inside as well with the other two, watching through the windows.
Mm-hmm.
So someone of them yelled to look up at the maple tree, which stood near the woods in their yard. Everyone could clearly see one of the creatures sitting on a very high branch.
Okay.
Lucky and Billy both shot at it, apparently hitting it, but the creature didn't fall. Instead, it floated off towards the woods.
Okay.
Soon, another creature came around the corner of the house, and the men shot it as well, but no effect. The creature just floated off in the woods.
Okay.
They also noticed that the noise they heard when the beings were struck by the bullets sounded like bullets hitting metal.
Okay.
So, interesting. So, knowing that their gunfire was useless, the men retreated back into the house. The group wondered what these beings were, like they were discussing possible plans of action, how to defend the home. They pointed out that the creatures were seemingly spooked by light. They noticed that whenever they like turned on another light in the house, they seemed to like back away.
All right.
So they turned on every light in the house and just sort of waited. The night started to grow quiet and it seemed to them that even the crickets had gone silent.
Hmm.
The silence was then broken as one of the children started to cry, ruining it for everyone. So Lucky tried to brainstorm what to do as the child was calmed down, but was interrupted as the group heard scratching coming from the roof.
Okay.
So Lucky rushed outside and seeing the creature, a creature on top of the house, fired his gun at it. Like the others, it sort of floated down and seemed unhurt and then scrambled out of sight into the trees.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, right. I mean, it's the same effect. I don't know why they're still shooting at these things. So clearly, Lucky thought, the strange goblin men couldn't be deterred. Quote, at least not by any means an ordinary farm family had at their disposal. So the group decided that escape was their only option. When they observed that the coast was clear, the party of 11 rushed out of the house and piled into the trucks that had been parked there earlier and took off.
Okay.
So then it's now just before midnight. this whole group arrives at the Hopkinsville police station.
All right.
The bewildered officer listened as they talked about fighting off the, quote, little silver men for hours.
Yep.
Anything?
Nope.
Interesting. So he may not have believed the story, but it was clear that something had spooked them. After all, like, it's almost midnight and they have children with them. Like, come on.
Yeah. Hey, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the chief of police was notified, as was the Kentucky State Police, the Christian County Sheriff's Office, and the Fort Campbell Army Base.
Okay.
So there's no one who doesn't know about this currently. So with all this talk, the local paper also got wind of the events and sent a photographer to go check this out.
Yep.
So within an hour, the Sutton Farm was being investigated by half a dozen officers and media employees while the family watched anxiously.
All right.
Authorities searched the whole property, combing through and finding plenty of bullet holes and shell casings, but no goblins. One officer then noticed something glowing in the woods and called some others to go investigate, but the search turned up nothing.
Okay.
When directed to the spot where one of the goblins had fallen after Lucky, like, shot them, police noticed a strange stain that, quote, gave off an iridescent sheen when viewed from an angle.
When viewed from an okay. Yeah. All right.
So they didn't really find much else, but the family was questioned separately, and their stories were all consistent.
Okay.
Later, a neighbor about a quarter mile north of the farm would say that around the same time as the event, he'd seen lights in the woods near them and figured the family had just been, like, searching for a pig or something that gotten out.
Okay.
And then when he heard the gunshots, he was like, oh, bobcats. See, there must be shooting at bobcats. Right, right. You know, all yep. that. But he did see those lights.
Okay.
So, again, the police didn't really find anything substantial. So they advised the family to just get some rest and then left.
So they left no one there?
Nope.
They just said, all right, nothing like, to see okay, here either.
Packing up, let's go.
Okay.
So you guys all get some sleep.
All right.
So the family uneasily obeyed, though it was hard for them to actually fall asleep once the quiet settled over the Sutton farm once more. At about 3:30 in the morning, Glennie awoke for the millionth time in her fitful sleep and looked out the window. To her horror, one of the goblins stood on the other side, seemingly watching her. She called out to Lucky, who awoke from his spot, dozing on the living room couch. So he and Billy then dutifully stood guard again, but the creatures never approached. And they seemed to actually, like, leave.
All right.
They left just before daybreak.
Okay.
And though they didn't know it then, that would be the last the family saw of these little goblin men.
Okay.
As with many extraterrestrial stories, the town didn't take the guests too seriously after this event. I can see from your face you're also not taking them too seriously. It didn't help that dozens of, like, UFO fanatics were flocking to the farm, eager to see if they could find any evidence of these little men.
Okay.
According to a current Hopkinsville resident, quote, there were so many reporters and looky-loos coming by and walking around the property, talking things and calling.
I'm just thinking something, because as you're saying all these things, I'm like, this sounds so familiar. You forgot about one movie that we watched, but keep going.
I forgot about a movie we watched?
Yeah.
What movie?
Farmageddon.
Oh.
It's pretty much this, but keep going. Well, it's not exactly, but oh very similar. God. I'm wondering if this subconsciously
we
is what...
we watched the Shaun the Sheep movie. Oh, my God.
Which is about?
Aliens.
Okay.
It is about aliens.
And what happens? Is it on a farm? Yes. And do a lot of UFO folk... As you're saying this, I'm going, wait, this sounds so familiar. So
I am not telling Farmageddon.
Please keep going. By the way, Farmageddon is funny, but keep going.
Yeah, it's also a children's movie. Anyway, looky-loos, they're coming by and walking around the property, taking things and calling them souvenirs, which is not cool. The family got sick of being harassed and called liars. They left within 10 days.
Just up and left?
Yeah, Glennie moved into town and she sold the farmhouse.
In 10 days?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it actually got sold, but she definitely moved out.
Oh, okay. Right.
And she, like, bought her own apartment in town. She felt that she needed to be around people and that she couldn't, like, be alone after that, which is fair.
Yeah.
JC also was affected by the events. He could no longer hold down a job as the events had, quote, psychologically messed with him.
Okay.
Also, Lucky didn't really talk about it that much after the event. His daughter, Geraldine, found out when she was 8, which was 14 years after the original attack, because he'd agreed to, like, tell a story in a book about UFO sightings.
All right.
According to Geraldine, quote, "My daddy didn't like how people treated him." It's really killing me not doing an accent here. Okay. How people treated him once the story got out. People made fun of him. It was traumatizing. Still to this day, the witnesses who are alive are afraid to talk. So the family all described the creatures similarly. Quote, 3 to 4 feet tall, with muscular upper bodies and atrophied legs, large glowing eyes, and pointy ears.
All right.
And I have a lot of pictures that I'll be posting. I'll show you some after. So Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who maybe you know of?
Nah.
He's kind of sort of like a famous in the UFO world. He's an astronomer and UFO researcher.
Okay.
Who had previously worked with the U.S. Air Force, but I don't know if it was for UFO reasons.
All right.
Shh, top secret. So he called the case, quote, "preposterous and offensive to common sense." So that was great, nice of him. Skeptics have all sorts of theories as to what the group actually saw. Some say that the goblins were actually monkeys that Lucky had brought back from the carnival.
Oh, come on.
And again, these creatures did not have tails.
Yeah, no, I'm not. That's okay, whatever.
Like, some people were like, oh, they were painted silver by Lucky and Billy for a prank.
All right.
Others thought that the family, quote, had mistaken great horned owls for aliens.
Yeah, okay.
Which I looked at a picture of great horned owls and I could see it, but
3 to 4 feet.
Exactly.
Okay.
And also they weren't feathery at all. These aliens. Again,
not that I'm saying this happened, but these excuses are they're worse or more crazy than what actually may have happened. Cause yeah. Okay.
Some even blamed Kentucky moonshine.
Yeah. Well, that could explain it easily.
Though police didn't find any on the property that night.
Cause they drank it all.
In fact, Glennie didn't allow alcohol on her property at all.
Yeah, okay.
She was very religious.
All right.
Anyway, when Lucky revisited the farmhouse in 1969 with his daughter, the building was like long since abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone's bought it at this point. I'm assuming somebody has. But it was sort of like destitute at this point. But there was what hadn't been mentioned earlier was that there's like a strange circular impression on the ground that had been there for since the attack. I say attack. We don't know if it was really an attack. They attacked them.
Since the events.
That was sort of near the well.
Uh-huh.
And Lucky thought that it could be like the spacecraft that they came in. Like it made that imprint. So that's his theory.
Hey.
Could be. So the story has been twisted and warped throughout history, as most stories are. Some say that there were 12 alien beings. Instead, there was only like 3 or 4 that the family reported seeing.
Right.
And also, they became known as the Little Green Men. Instead of gray or silver, because of like a misprint like in the newspapers.
Yeah, okay.
Which happens. So the encounter is called the Kelly Hopkinsville Encounter, and the aliens are sometimes called the Kelly Green Men.
Okay.
And this is because Hopkinsville is like really close to this like tiny little like unincorporated community called Kelly. And they're so close they kind of got like smushed together. So
sure.
Yeah. That's why there's Kelly in there.
Okay.
So Steven Spielberg used the encounter as partial inspiration for E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Huh. All right.
Very partial, I'm assuming.
Well,
very, very.
You don't remember either?
Well, I don't think I ever really saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
You what? No.
I've seen scenes, but I've definitely not.
You may have been, you know, could have been again 10 years ago when we watched all movies and now you don't remember them. But anyway.
We can watch it tonight.
Yeah.
And I also don't remember E.T. that much because I was very young.
Well, I don't, E.T. is not this.
I mean, I don't
know. I mean, I'm not saying that this, I could believe that.
It could have like just been like the Kickstarter.
Oh, well, yeah.
Like,
I mean, I think all these things definitely could have put the seeds of what he was going to do later. So I'm not disagreeing with that because, I mean, if it's that famous and everybody's talking about it and it's the first you hear of it, of course you're going to.
Yeah. Well, so in 2010, a Hopkinsville resident, the one that I quoted earlier, Joanne Smithy, was part of a committee created to brainstorm possible fundraising events for the community of Kelly. Of course, she brought up the idea of a Little Green Men Days festival, which we will maybe be going to someday. Okay. Someday.
Yeah, all right.
This is the one.
We'll just see those movies from 10 years ago. How about that?
Okay, deal. Fine. So anyway, Geraldine, who's Lucky's daughter, is an annual speaker at the event and is often...
Yeah, was not alive when any of this happened.
Yeah, but her father like told her the whole story. Blah, 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 blah. She's like, you know, setting the facts straight.
All right.
So she's often approached by people who want to tell their own stories of alien things.
I think that's great.
Which is really cool. They have like a puppet show too called, oh, I can't remember what it's called, but it's got like little alien like sock puppets and it's really cute. So in 2017, Hopkinsville endured another strange event, a solar eclipse.
I don't think they were the only ones.
Well, I know, but they they were like in a place where you would see the full solar eclipse. I'm trying to...
All right, fair enough.
They were like perfectly situated so you would see the whole thing.
Okay.
For 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
Okay. And then...
So that attracted a lot of tourists, but not only because of the eclipse.
And then...
But hold on. Okay. Because the event took place on the 62-year anniversary of the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter.
And then they saw...
And people were like, well, maybe the aliens are coming back.
And then they
didn't. Sorry. They did not come back. That we know of. Yeah. Maybe they were just sort of like watching.
Okay. Yeah.
But like if they don't like light and it's only 2 minutes and 40 seconds of darkness.
It's plenty of time to come by and say, hey, how's it going?
Well, maybe after the last time that they came and it were immediately shot at by like five different people.
Could have been their children. They wouldn't have known. Maybe they would have come back to seek revenge.
Okay. Well, they didn't show their faces.
Okay.
But so, yeah, I don't know. The festival happened like right after that and it was a fun time, but no aliens showed up. But the Kelly Green Men or the Hopkinsville Kelly encounter thing is pretty well known. It's in my cryptozoology book, actually.
I don't know why it's in your cryptozoology book.
I don't know. I
makes no sense.
They are
now they're just trying to grab other things.
Listen, don't you insult Lauren Coleman.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, he can't just grab aliens.
This man is a pivotal
person. Is he a pillar of the community?
No, I think he might be a little bit of a hermit.
I will say, though, now, I believe the family more after all those conspiracy crap excuses. So, all right, Glennie, I believe you.
Yeah, I would like to believe that this is real. I think it would be really
fun. Well, again, I believe that there's definitely other things out there. But
oh, there's definitely aliens.
Yeah,
but if they visited...
Well, again, right now, again, I think we said this before. If they came right now, they'd be like, where the hell out? They may go to a different place.
I read that, like, aliens, if they, like, looked at Earth from their own planets, would see the dinosaurs. Like, if they had a strong enough telescope.
Oh, because of
the time.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Which is really cool. And that's probably why they're staying the hell away.
Well, it's only a matter of time, right?
That's true.
Oh, cool. Well, hey, there you go then.
Yeah, so... That's my story.
All right. That was good. Good. Okay. So I'm doing true crime. And it is... it's very... there's a lot of violence. I'm not going to go through all the detail of the things, but I'm just going to start. I'm not going to say anything else. Just going to go in.
Okay.
All right? Here we go. In September of 1994, Julia Kirkpatrick and her husband, Leonard... were finalizing their divorce.
No.
Nothing?
No.
Okay. They had a son, Joel, and he would have been 7 at the time of the divorce. And in the next 18 months, Leonard was fighting for sole custody of Joel.
Okay.
Julia at the time was studying for a PhD in educational psychology. But Leonard, and I don't know, there was not a lot of information about their marriage or what caused the breakup or anything else, but he believed that she was very volatile and unstable. So that was part of the reason why he wanted custody.
Okay.
In March of 96, he actually won full custody of Joel. So Joel could only visit Julia based on whatever Leonard wanted. So
okay.
On weekends, things like that, it had to be, he decided when, where, how often. Now, if there was any love left between the two, it was only Joel, right? Because it didn't show anything. It was just when Joel was the only connection from their previous lives. On October 13th, 1997, Joel was visiting Julia in her home, and I think they lived in Lawrenceville, Illinois, in Lawrence County.
Okay.
After dinner, watching some TV, you know, Joel went to bed, and then Julia was cleaning up the rest of everything else and just getting prepped for bed. So they're asleep, and some point in the evening, all hell breaks loose. And this is this summary I'm just going to write or read out is Julia's description of what happened through multiple interviews and all these other things that had gone through, or just from time. She remembered being startled awake by a child's scream.
Oh, boy.
And it wasn't a nightmare scream. It was, or nor anything that she had heard Joel scream in the past. She immediately got up from her bed and raced into Joel's room. And the hallway light was on in between. Just that was like the night light to go to the bathroom so that Joel could find the bathroom like that. And as she entered the room, the light from the hallway shone on his bed and he wasn't there. Just empty. So she yelled for Joel, but there was no answer.
No.
Out of nowhere, right, somebody leapt from, like, so she saw the bed and one part of the bed. Somebody leapt from the other side of the bed and brushed past her and didn't knock over, but enough to just hit her so she would take, right, you know, feel it.
Like lose balance, kind of.
Right. So the person was wearing a mask and was dressed all in black. Julia raced after him through the hallway, past the living room, and into the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And as they're in the kitchen, the intruder makes leaps through this glass door that goes to the garage, just shattering the glass.
Jeez.
Then in the garage, goes to another glass door to get to the backyard. But Julia is not stopping. She's still running right after her. And I guess somehow catches up and they...
tackles him?
Well, I don't know if he tripped or whatever because of the glass and everything, mm-hmm, like that. But she gets hold of his legs and they're now on the ground. And somehow then the intruder gets his arm on her neck while she's holding on to his legs. Like, I don't know exactly sure how this will happen, but he then starts beating her, like punching her.
Oh my God.
And she can't believe the force that this is. At first I think she thought it was, is this Joel for, I don't know, at least, you know, what's going on kind of thing. But at one point he kicked her so hard in the head that she just like had to let go, and was just in a daze. And, she basically, when she got her wits about her, was screaming like, "My, you know, Joel's gone, Joel's gone," right? So she's running now to neighbors, banging on doors and screaming like, "Joel's gone, Joel's gone." Right. You know, he's been kidnapped. So the police are called, paramedics show up, and, you know, she's got wounds all over, like partially from the glass through the window or through going through the doors, you know, kicks and things like that. And they're tending to her. And of course, the police are now searching the house. And soon they discover on the other side of the bed,
no,
is Joel.
No.
He had been stabbed 13 times, no, with a steak knife that was taken from the kitchen. No. So again, you know, this is happening in a pretty small town, quiet street kind of thing. So they're cordoning off the house and they're starting their investigation. And it's not considered kidnapping because it's a homicide. So all this is going on. Julia's trying to keep her life together. Can't believe that she was that close. Like, went to the room like that person was there. How did she not know?
Right.
But weeks go by, months go by, and they really don't have any leads. So she decides that she has to get out of town because there's just too much bad memories, right? So she transfers to the Indiana University to complete her PhD. Mm-hmm. And the investigation would go on while she was there. Now, what was learned as the investigators went through, and, you know, the press, of course, were involved, the husband's getting involved because of this ugly divorce and everything.
Right.
And they start to learn there was no physical evidence of an intruder in the home. No fingerprints, no forced entry, no, like, blood from going through glass, nothing. Hmm. And Julia, during this time, is settling in Indiana to the point where she actually has gone on a date and met some guy and gets married.
Okay.
Just happened to be a lawyer. And she now went, instead of from Julia Kirkpatrick, her new name was, or her married name was Julia Ray Harper.
Okay.
Nothing?
Still nothing.
On October 12th, 2000, almost 3 years to the day of her mm-hmm. son dying, Julia Ray Harper would be arrested for the murder of her son. The prosecutor, Ed Parkinson, would tell reporters at the press conference and through other, you know, reporters that it was Julia's own story that focused them on her. Mm. Okay. So what ended up happening was 2020 did a story about this. I don't know if this was after she got arrested and everything else. Like, I don't know if it was one of those, like, you know, investigative things, like, okay, now she's in jail, blah, 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 that kind of thing.
Right.
But this was part of his interview for 2020. And I'm just going to quote some of these things. He basically said it was too far-fetched, the story. And I quote, "To believe her, you would have to believe that this assailant came into her home in the middle of the night in dark clothes, hiding his identity by use of a mask for the sole purpose of killing a 10-year-old boy. And after he accomplished his result, he pulled off the mask to reveal his identity to her." Nonsense. So I guess she said at some point that happened.
Weird.
He goes on to say, he dismissed the notion that someone else could have committed this crime. No one in the world except Julia Ray fits the killer.
Ooh.
In May of 2002, after only a two-week trial, she was sentenced to 65 years.
Wow.
In prison, okay?
And how old is she at this point?
She was, I think, 31 or something like that, okay. Or 34, I can't remember, when it happened. So maybe 36 or something like that.
Okay.
In 2002, same time, like after this all going through, so I guess maybe the 2020 thing happened after she was convicted and they were just doing like a, you know how the stories go, like whatever we watch, they try to explain, is it this person? Do you think this is a killer? Right. Blah, blah, blah. A crime writer, Diane Fanning, was corresponding with a convicted murderer in Texas while he was on death row.
Okay.
She wanted to understand his psyche for the crimes involving two young girls. And in a letter, the killer, responding back, responded, about what he was saying. But I don't know why this happened, but unsolicited, he talked about Joel's murder.
Whoa.
He gave much more detail than had ever been revealed through press, anything, you know, the police, whatever else it would be. She soon realized that this was no longer about two Texas girls. And as she dug deeper, she realized she was dealing with one of the worst unknown serial killers of all time. This is a story of Tommy Lynn Sells, nicknamed the Coast to Coast Killer.
I've heard of this. I don't know anything about it, though.
All right. So let me talk to you my sources.
Ooh.
Thought Co. had actually almost a synopsis, almost a profile of it. It was the first time I'd seen it on Thought Co. I know Thought Co. shows lots of murders, but it was broken up by crime, early life, not Wikipedia-esque, but or Murderpedia-esque, but you know, it was kind of a nice little write-up. It's where I started, but then that got me onto this Julia Ray thing. So I found that and I read all about her, and there's actually some more stuff with her. I don't remember I told you about that university, Radford University. There was these students that were doing So I used their chronological events and everything else as well, and just kind of more history about the profile itself. That serial cloud site, I think I mentioned once before too.
Yeah.
Wikipedia as well. And then there was one blog, I think, called lifedeathprizes.com that had I found them from the Julia Ray part. They still think she may have done it, but it talked more about Tommy Lynn. And then 2020, any excerpts I found, I didn't watch the whole episode. And of course, there's two, because they had the Julia Ray one, mm-hmm. and then they have one about him. And then this guy has been interviewed in Cold Blooded Killers. There's a show. I mean,
okay.
Like three or four shows he's been interviewed. He actually has his own IMDb page because he's done so many. So, to the crime timeline.
Crime timeline.
Tommy Lynn Sells, I'm gonna end up saying Sales at some point, was born on June 28th, 1964.
So close.
Mm. He also had a twin, his sister. Her name was Tammy Jean. At 18 months old, they both contracted meningitis.
Oh, wow.
He would recover, but she would die.
Oh.
His mother decided to send him to live with his aunt. I don't know exactly why, but
Just because.
But he did until the age of 5. And since the aunt was raising him, she's like, I'm going to adopt him. And once that process started, the mom was like, oh, you know, you won't.
Oh, my God.
And brought him back home. And when he came home, she kind of just, I mean, she didn't really know him. I mean, she didn't see him while she was with the, while he was with the aunt. And they talked about it, like, I mean, all post interviews, he would said it was the happiest time of his life. He just remembered riding his big wheel down the street of her neighborhood. At the age of 8, he would claim that he was being molested by a known pedophile in the area and that his mother knew about it and allowed it.
Wow.
At the age of 10, he stopped going to school and started to smoke pot and started to drink. And he did that by, I guess he was also living with his grandparents at the time, so he just stole his grandfather's drink, booze, like just would do it all the time.
Jeez.
At 13, he decided to climb into his grandmother's bed naked.
Ew.
That was like the last straw for all of them. Like, this guy's got problems. No, we're not. And the mother decided, and I guess the grandmother decided to, and this is his take. His take was that they basically moved at the darkness of night and left, abandoned him. He had no idea where they were.
What the hell? That is not how you deal with that problem.
They said that that wasn't the case. That he knew that they were moving.
That's still not good.
And that he was done. Like, he had to figure it out himself because, you know, of just those things.
Oh, my God.
Well, this abandonment triggers a life of violence now, okay?
Great. So,
also at 13, his first brush with crime, he pistol whips a girl until she's unconscious.
Holy shit.
Then, with, again, no home, he just becomes very transient, and he starts traveling across the United States any way he can.
Lovely.
At 16, he commits his first murder. He breaks into the
16?
Home. Yeah. He actually wanted to rob this house, and he was casing it, and he believed it to be the home of a pedophile, and he broke in when the pedophile was actually abusing, in the act of abuse, and...
Ooh.
Again, there's no, they didn't find anything about this, but he says he did it. Then he claims to have killed a John Cade Sr. after he was discovered burglarizing his home. So he got caught in the act.
Okay.
And they do have a report of John Cade Sr. dying.
Okay.
Then in May of 81, he started to get into some more scrapes to the point where he got actually injured. So there's all these things about him getting in bar fights, this, that, whatever. But at one point he got into such a fight between two people that he had to be hospitalized. But as he was hospitalized, he was so rude and violent to the nurses that they just couldn't even take care of him. And he ended up being discharged. He voluntarily said he would too, because again, they just couldn't do anything. And he ends up returning home to his mother, so she can nurse him.
So he knows where she is?
Yes. To nurse him back to health.
Oh my God.
While at his home, getting better, he attempts to enter the shower while his mother is in it.
Ew.
Yeah, just, you can let your imagination run there.
I don't want to.
Well, she beats the crap out of him.
Okay.
And kicks him out.
Great.
So again, he starts traveling the country. This time, working pretty much as a carny. Traveling with carnival folk and going from fair to fair, town to town. And now things begin to escalate. He would get caught stealing cars, and he would end up serving prison time for that. But he'd usually get out early.
Great.
And, of course, violating his probation because he'd leave the state. In 82, he met this woman while on the carny tour. And he would marry, and they would have a son. However, the family, of course, couldn't stand him. And then he got accused of stealing from the church. So I believe the marriage got annulled, and then he went back on the run.
Lovely.
In 83, he meets this woman, Colleen Gill, and then he kills her and her 4-year-old daughter. In 85, he meets Ina Court. She invites him back to her house. He kills her and her 4-year-old son.
Oh, my God.
He would then get arrested for drunk driving and crashing the car. And he would then end up going to jail for 2 years.
Okay.
And before being released, he was studied, you know, psychiatric, everything, you know.
Lovely.
And they basically diagnosed him as bipolar. All right. So when he gets released in 86, he then overdoses on heroin.
Oh.
And gets hospitalized for that.
Okay.
After his release, he steals a car from the parking lot of the hospital.
Oh, lovely.
And starts to head towards Texas.
Lovely.
I'm not sure where he was when all these other things happened, but when he arrives in Texas, he gets a job as a tow truck driver.
Okay.
And at one point, he's towing a woman's car, believed to be a sex worker because of the area it was, and he tries to barter with her instead of saying, oh, look, you know.
Oh, my God.
If we have sex, fine. I'll release the car. She refuses, shoots her dead.
Oh, my God.
Another woman is also found dead in the area with her throat cut and thrown into a car, all in that same area.
But did he ever, like, confess to that one? Or is that just, like,
so all these things I'm telling you about are not known. Like, this happened after the fact. Like, no one knew it was him for any of these things until much later.
Wow.
When Diane Fanning
was, like, corresponding with him.
Right. Jesus. So all this comes out post-jail. Right? So in May of 87... while traveling through Niagara Falls, he kills a Suzanne Coors, 27, outside of a bar. And her remains weren't found until 8 years later, only 2 miles away from the barn. Then in October of 87, he's now in Nevada. And there he strangles a Stephanie Stroh.
Ooh. All right.
The next killing would go unsolved for 12 years. And this one, you may have heard this one. This killing is... it was a cold case. I think we actually watched the cold case.
Really?
Because I'm trying to do the timeline. So this is in 87. This is November of 87. So they wouldn't have found it till 2000. So it had to be on one of those cold case files previous to the year 2000. Hmm. So it was November 18th. Keith Dardine.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Didn't I cover a Dardine family?
Was it an unsolved?
Yeah. It was a family, though. Was it his whole family?
Yes.
Wait, I covered this case.
Okay, well, they saw cells. He saw cells. Keith saw cells hitchhiking.
I might have brought this up.
In Ena, Illinois.
Whoa.
And he befriended them. Like, Keith befriended him, a very religious family, and offered him a hot meal in his home.
Okay.
Cells would then, to repay him, shoot Keith dead.
Oh, my God.
Then bludgeon his 3-year-old son with a hammer.
This is, I think, the case I covered.
And then assault his pregnant wife, sexually assault his pregnant wife.
Yes.
Which would cause her to go into labor.
Oh, I remember this. I remember that.
And he would kill her, bludgeoning her with a bat, and then the newborn.
Yep.
So, like, the whole town, you know, when this happened, were, like, it was insane.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Timothy Lynn Sells. So, now here's another one that is more...
Wait, but this one says that it was a teenager.
Did they actually arrest somebody?
I don't... This is so long ago. This is from September 2019.
But...
this is in... You said Ena, Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... It's the same... 1985.
Right, but... 80. Well, it said 87, but maybe the years are kind of... But who said it...
What this is Keith, the father, Elaine, the mother, Peter, the 2-year-old son, and then I did say the suspect, Tommy Lynn Sells.
Yeah.
It was a suspect, but it was said he was inaccurate about a lot of details.
No, he confessed. So, in September of 88, in Salem, New Hampshire, and I remember this one, Melissa Ann Tremblay would disappear when she was, and then found on a railroad track, and reports would say that she was seen speaking to someone who looked very much like Sells. And he never admitted to this, but they tracked his whereabouts, and he was in New Hampshire during this time. In 91, he was in Wyoming, and he steals a truck and he gets stopped for driving drunk. He's arrested and he goes to jail to serve for 16 months.
Okay.
After his release, he finds his way to West Virginia. All right. While in West Virginia, this is May of 92, he meets a Fabian Witherspoon. She's driving and sees him panhandling under an underpass. All right. She sees, you know, she just pities him and offers him a hot meal and basically brings him to her house, tells him to wait outside. She's going to go in and get him food, clothing, whatever like that. Next thing she knows, she turns around and he's right there. Then he pushes her into his room, into her room, attacks her, sexually assaults her, and stabs her. Somehow, she fights him off.
Oh my God.
Gets the knife and actually wounds him, like they think 23 times. He then takes a piano stool and beats her unconscious.
Oh my God.
But she survives.
Okay, good.
He's arrested and he's sentenced for 2 to 10 years. But somehow the rape charge is dropped.
Oh my God.
I don't even know what's going on. And while he's in prison, again, gets diagnosed to being bipolar. Okay. May of 97, he's released. So he only serves 5 years. And while he was also in prison, he met this woman, Nora Price. Mm-hmm. So they moved together to Tennessee, but he abandons her frequently while he goes on these cross-country trips with the carnival.
Lovely.
October 97, in Springfield, Missouri, he kills 13-year-old Stephanie Mahaney. Her body would be found in a farm pond. Wow. Then, during 1998, this carnival that he's traveling with, he meets this woman who's, I guess, also a carnian somehow, Jessica Levery, a mother of four. They settle down in Texas, and he marries her illegally because he's still married to the other woman, Nora Price, that when he met jail. And he fathers a child, but they immediately put the child up for adoption.
Okay.
On April 4th, 1999, he's in Tennessee, and he meets Deborah Harris and her 8-year-old daughter, and he stabs them both to death.
Oh, my God.
And on April 18th, 1999, Mary B. Perez, 9 years old, is found in a drainage ditch.
No.
She had been abducted from the county fair carnival.
Oh.
May 13th, 1999, in Lexington, Kentucky, Haley McHone, 13, is found strangled and sexually assaulted.
Oh my God.
Sells actually stole her bike and then sold it for $20.
Oh my Jesus Christ.
July of 1999, in Oklahoma, Bobby Lynn Wolford, 14, is abducted and sexually assaulted. She was shot and her body wouldn't be found for another 4 months. Then, December 30th, 1999, in Oklahoma, Danny and Kathy Freeman are found dead in a burning mobile home. Their daughter, Ashley, and her friend, Laura, were never found.
No.
However, Sells says that he took the bodies and dumped them in the Red River that's on the border of Texas and Oklahoma.
Lovely.
On December 31st, 1999, he's, again, in Texas, he's back with Jessica when all this is happening. 10-year-old Crystal Searles was having a sleepover at her friend's house, Kayleen Katie Harris, 13, for New Year's Eve.
Okay.
While they were sleeping, Sells entered the room.
No.
He slashed Katie's throat, killing her immediately.
Oh, my God.
He then slashed Crystal's throat. She pretended to be dead. She dropped to the floor and pretended to be dead. 10 years old.
I think I've heard of this, too.
Well, she waited for him to leave and then escaped, thinking that everyone had been killed in the house. She went to neighbors' homes trying to tell them what happened, but she can't talk. So she's writing it out. So there's pictures of it. It's 10-year-old writing that they're all dead, got somebody to send help, do this, do that. So again, 10 years old. Crystal then provides the most incredibly detailed composite sketch of Sells. And they find out later that Sells knew Katie's father, her adoptive father, and Katie was always the target.
Oh my God, that is disgusting.
Sells is arrested days later in his trailer with Jessica.
Right.
He goes to trial in September of 2000, where he actually pled guilty to Katie's murder and attempted murder of Crystal, and he is sentenced to death.
Good.
He was indicted for a couple other murders and received some additional life sentences, right? Just based on the, they had believed him. This is before even any of this stuff goes down. So in 2002, the crime writer Diane Fanning begins corresponding with Sells as, you know, he waits execution. Mm-hmm. And what Sells tells Fanning in a later interview is that Ray Harper, you know, Julia,
yes, yeah,
had been rude to him in a convenience store.
Oh my God.
So to get back at her, he followed her home and then murdered the boy. In the confession, along with Fanning's testimony at a prison review board, it, and with help of the Innocence Project, it resulted in a new trial for Harper that ended in her acquittal. But this whole was the beginning of opening up investigations into cold cases across the country. And as they traced his whereabouts, like I was saying before, like they actually just followed his path where this carnival and these other things, they found evidence, enough evidence for 22 murders.
22.
However, Sells confessed to at least 70, and they couldn't piece together all of them.
70 murders?
Right. Sells was executed by lethal injection in the Allen B. Polinsky unit near West Livingston, Texas, on April 3rd, 2014 at 6:27 p.m. Central Standard Time. He declined to make a final statement.
Jesus Christ.
And that's the story of Tommy Lynn Sells.
Wow. I've definitely heard bits and pieces of that, because I remember the Katie Crystal, I remember that story very clearly.
Yeah.
And I definitely covered the Dardenne family. That was our 1 year anniversary episode.
And what were you covering then?
I covered the Dardenne family murder.
Just that murder itself.
Just that murder. And I said that he was a suspect, but I didn't say that he was the actual killer.
Well,
because this said that it was their son. But I don't know.
No, he was picked up.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. And there you go. Wow.
That's gruesome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fun fact time.
All right. So I only have one fun fact this week.
Okay.
But it is related to my little gray men case.
Okay.
And it is that the goblin alien creatures from the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter inspired a Pokemon called Sableye.
Huh.
Which I looked up, and it's really cute.
Did you ever capture?
No, I don't really play Pokemon.
Oh, okay.
I just briefly sometimes. Played Pokemon briefly. Go. I don't.
Oh really, my God.
I
briefly jumped like on a the year.
Tent. Yeah.
Okay, that's
but not continually.
Okay,
fair but enough. I didn't know.
So you didn't capture.
I did not.
Okay.
But in the games, they are animated, quote, with a swaying or wading motion based on the creature's reported gait.
And what color are they? Green or are they gray?
They're purple.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
It inspired it. They look very similar. I'm going to post a picture, but it's just basically like different colors. But I thought it was very interesting that it has so many like pop culture like references.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to submit your own fun facts, including any carnival ones like you so desperately want, I don't have the thing up. Hold on. You can submit them.
I think I'm going to use my song is going to be... Carnival number 9. It's the second. There's, I think it's, I don't know if it's part two or second. I can't remember the name, but I'm just going to, it's too long to list it on our thing, but
I'm just going to put part of it.
We'll just say Carnival number 9.
Okay.
It's the good one. There's like six different
cats. Yeah, shouldn't there be 9 of them?
I guess. I don't know if this was Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Okay. Anyway, so you can submit your own fun facts to our email, which is everythinginpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you have story suggestions or you have your own stories that you'd like to tell us about, please send them there. We'd love to read them and maybe read them out on the podcast. So definitely do that. You can also submit them to our website, which is www.everythingpodcast.weebly.com. We'd love to see those there as well. We're on social media. Our Instagram is @everythinginpodcast. Our Twitter is @between_podcast. And we have a Facebook group and page, both by the name of Everything In Between Podcast. So check those out. We post when new episodes come out. You'll see all the visuals from today that we were talking about. And it's really fun. Really great graphics made by a niche every week. So they're great. And if you're listening on a platform that allows you to do so, please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe. It's really helpful and gives us a nice ego boost. And then lastly, as we were just saying, we pick a song that represents each of our stories as our episode title each week. And we've compiled all those songs into a playlist on Spotify, which is called The Soundtrack In Between.
So, I was just checking to see if you had updated that recently.
I did.
Did you update it on the day? It doesn't look like you updated it on the day.
Not on the day.
Yeah, no. Okay.
It was like the day after.
Uh-huh.
It was.
Okay.
Anyway, so check that out. And I think that's about it.
It's 114 songs now, 8 hours.
Maybe we should separate it into multiple playlists. Let us know. Give us an email. But yeah, until next week, see ya.
We'll see ya.
Bye.
Bye.